This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. It is Friday Politics on WWNO 89.9 New Orleans and WRKF 89.3 Baton Rouge. Our show originates from the Investar Tower in Baton Rouge, and signature support is from the office of East Baton Rouge Parish Mayor President Sharon Weston Broom. Again, 877-217-5757, and emails go to talk@talklouisiana.org. Lieutenant Governor Billy Nungesser is with us, and he has been elected three times, and there's much to catch up with him about. And good morning to you, Lieutenant Governor.
How you doing, my friend?
I'm doing well. It's always great to hear your distinctive voice. And
well,
go ahead.
I just got some pictures with some obscenities and free Gosna painted all over the Presbyterian in the French Quarter last night in red paint. So vandals kind of defaced the property there in the French Quarter.
Oh, my goodness.
Somebody with their head covered is on surveillance camera. Pretty sad that they would deface the historical building like that.
Well, some of those items go back centuries.
Well, it's outside. It's all over the outside. It's not inside. We have a fence across the front. We lock at night, so they did it in the middle of the night last night to the hole outside the building.
How extensive was the damage based on what you know?
Well, that is a historical building, and the paint and the structure on the outside, it depends on how deep that paint is, whether we can just remove it quickly or it eats into the surface where we may have to do some plaster work. But we had just gotten those museums in the last few years redone the outside and done a lot of extensive work on the windows and everything outside. So hopefully we'll be able to remove it without a lot of cost.
Well, it's unfortunate. As we know, it only takes one bad apple or two to do a lot of damage. And unfortunately, it's in one of the great places in Louisiana. And we kind of segue to a topic earlier this week. A listener, when we were talking, I think, with Governor Landry, asked about litter. And of course, the lieutenant governor in the past historically has been at the forefront of trying to do something about cleaning up our roadways and making us a more pristine state. I remember Bobby Freeman, when he held your post, recommended putting people in jail for littering. What can we do to help the cause?
Well, we're asking for some additional funding this year in the legislature because our study that we did, an extensive study across the state, and showed that we spent about $100 million a year cleaning up after the fact. And just like Tennessee and some of the other states that have been successful, if we spend a little more on the front end, we can save millions on the back end. And I want to applaud the governor for extending the executive order to keep this committee with state police, wildlife, fisheries under my office intact, DOTD. We're working with DOTD right now. I think DOTD realizes they can't manage grass cutting and litter from Baton Rouge. We need to get this to the local governments, subsidize, make sure they get enough money. Where they'll manage it, they'll make sure it's done, because we've paid people to pick up litter before in the interstates that admitted they never picked it up, even though they were paid for it. So that's the start of the problem, enforcing contractors that are supposed to be doing the work. But we also got to enforce the laws. And I tell you, the Keep Louisiana Beautiful, when we took over this 2 years ago, was 40 groups. This week, over 700 groups in all 64 parishes are cleaning up Louisiana. And if you pick up trash for a day, you're 80% less likely to litter. So now you can check out Tongs Invest at your local library, take your kids out for a day, get some exercise, and pick up trash. So we're going to tackle it from all ends until we put the paradise back at Sportsman's Paradise.
877-217-5757 and talk@talklouisiana.org. And Hal in Monroe asked the question about the budget, and I doubt that the lieutenant governor has really had an opportunity to go through the weeds, but the House did approve a $48 billion budget. And Hal makes a good point, and I just checked him, and he's right. 10 years ago, the budget for the state of Louisiana, and by the way, most of it is federal funding, but still, the budget 10 years ago was $25,519,000,000. Now it's $48 billion, almost double in 10 years. What happened? Governor, you got any thoughts about why this inflation, federal funding? We took the Medicaid money, but still, that's a big jump, almost, almost $23 billion in 10 years.
Absolutely. It's kind of runaway. And I think the governor has asked every department to look at their budgets. We've consolidated a lot of jobs in all my departments. We asked the governor this year to allow us to move people from department to department and tightening our belt. You know, when I took office, 7 state parks were slated to close. Today, 7 are making a profit. And because of the private-public partnership I'm doing, our team, within a few years, we won't need any tax dollars to run our parks. They'll generate millions of dollars for our state. And I think we got to look at those kind of things. We can do the same thing with our museums. We got to plan for that with private-public partnerships. And we got to look at government more like a business and how do we operate it more efficiently and what can we do to generate revenue. And some of these departments that have a lot of employees that maybe we need to look at some subcontracting and some things that would save money for the state and look at it from a business aspect. And I think the governor's task a lot of his new department heads to do that.
877-217-5757. And Tracy at the Capitol notes that the Medicaid money that Louisiana took from the feds is almost all paid for by the federal government. So that is a good point. But that would have, we live in such a poor state, and many people, of course, are benefiting from that, but that's in the budget, and it's gone from a little under $26 billion 10 years ago to $48 billion today. Jazz Fest, which may be a bigger economic driver than even a Super Bowl, and it comes to New Orleans every year, and at the fairgrounds, I'm sure a good time will be had by all. And what do you make of this year's event, Billy Nungesser?
Well, you know, it has about a $300 million economic impact. And Quint Davis and his team has not only done a great job at putting on, I believe, one of the greatest festivals in the world, but they also, by the exposure they get around the country and around the world, getting people to buy the tickets to come, and then the social media exposure, the people that come and share it, is publicity you couldn't pay for. And so it is an unbelievable economic benefit. It's great for the hotels, the city, and then Festive International and Lafayette going on at the same time. A lot of people go to both of them. We get people from 15 countries in Lafayette for that event. So both of those events side by side have been an incredible economic boost for the state. And we're seeing more and more people that come, stay a little longer. They'll go visit Natchitoches. They'll go visit some other places. They'll take a swamp tour. So it's not only benefiting New Orleans and the event in Lafayette, but all the surrounding parishes see an economic benefit from those two big events.
Again, 877-217-5757. We'll go to the phone lines. We do ask you to be brief in your remarks with Lieutenant Governor Billy Nungesser. Another listener asks, are you going to see the Rolling Stones, Lieutenant Governor?
I am not. I actually bought a couple tickets, but because of the session and changing the scheduling that I have to be there to present my bills, I'm not going to be going, and I sold those tickets for exactly what I paid for them to a friend.
All right. Well, it'll be a fun time had by all, and I'm sure thousands, maybe even hundreds of thousands. It's going to be an amazing crowd to see Mick Jagger and Keith Richards, who are now past 80 years old. In fact, Mike Wolfe, the noted attorney and libertarian, says he's going, but he says it's not the Rolling Stones, it's the Strolling Bones.
And Jim, congratulations on being inducted in the Political Hall of Fame. That is a great honor, and I'm sorry I couldn't be with you that night to celebrate.
So, well, thank you.
I'm proud of you, my friend.
And I believe you're in, right?
No, my father's in.
Okay, well, then we need to get both non-guessers in. I used to spend a lot of quality time with Billy's dad when he was chair of the Republican Party, and when I would get in a jam and I needed a news story, I still remember the number. 504-362-0744, Billy Nungesser Sr.
Right.
There you go. Mike in Villa Del Rey. Mike, you're on. Good morning. Mike in Baton Rouge.
Good morning, Lieutenant Governor. I think you're doing a great job. my question is, do you think the agenda that Representative Cruz and all this union busting and cutting unemployment benefits and cutting workman's comp and all the anti-LGBT, do you think that's keeping younger people in the state?
All right. Do we have a culture war that perhaps could thwart growth in Louisiana, Governor?
You know, I'm sure it does affect it one way or the other. Only time will tell. And we get that pushback in the tourism industry every time there's some controversy bills filed. How much will it affect tourism? Well, we never know until something's done and you see the fallout, good or bad, from any legislation.
877-217-5757. A bit more time with Lieutenant Governor Billy Nungesser after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Billy Nungesser is with us, and if you have something on your mind, please be brief in your remarks, and the governor, I'm sure, will take all comers. Chris in Mandeville. Chris, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Hey, thanks. I just wanted to ask real quickly. We know what we need to do in Louisiana. It's what they've done in Texas, Tennessee, Florida, et cetera. We need to cut taxes, cut spending, do something about the trial lawyers, have more business-friendly environment. Are we going to be able to do that? It's simple. It may not be difficult, but it's simple.
It's simple to talk about. It may be a lot more difficult to implement because every cut has a constituency. And some of these programs that are cut, in fact, I would surmise that almost all of them have some benefit. And you have to pick and choose sometimes, Lieutenant Governor.
Absolutely. You know, Jim, when I was looking at running for governor, I turned down a lot of large political donations because people want you to promise things that aren't in the best interest of Louisiana. And I truly would never want to be governor if I couldn't look every vote in the eye and say, every decision I make is going to be best and what's best for Louisiana. And when he talks about the trial lawyers and some of the structure there, I think there's got to be a compromise. And absolutely, we've got to do things to compete with other states. We hear that time and time again, why companies don't locate here. And I think sitting at the table, and let's be fair, but let's make some real effort. We introduce a few bills every year and talk about reform, but it never does anything. And so you got to put some teeth in some things to really make sure we're competitive. We got to get rid of income tax. If we're going to compete with Florida and Texas, everyone I know made plenty of money in Louisiana, now lives in Texas or Florida. And there's a mechanism to do it, but you got to sit at the table and be willing to make the tough decisions. And that's what I hope we can do in the near future.
But if we reduce taxes in one area, inevitably we'll have to raise them in another or take away an exemption. What about the prospect of taking away the $75,000 homestead exemption?
Well, let me give you one idea, and I don't know the cost of that. So if you remember, Dave Treen and my father introduced the quail tax, and I don't like the word tax. But if, you know, Steve Scalise keeps saying we're going to get more offshore revenue from the federal government, we never getting it. But if we put a fee, a small fee, 0.05 cents or whatever.
I know what you're talking about.
Processed fuels. Well, if we did that and we included LNG, you're probably looking at $100 billion. Louisiana could be Dubai. We could get rid of income tax. We could pay our teachers and police $100,000 a year. We could take $4 or $5 billion and clean up Cancer Alley. We could fix it all. And it might be doable because if you remember, John Bell gave local government the authority to take away the local tax exempt from chemical plants. ConocoPhillips shut down in Plaquemines Parish. So give them the land free forever. And what else do you want? But help us let the 95% of this stuff that goes up the East Coast, let those people pay a little user fee for using Louisiana. And I've been giving that to a few legislators, and they say, why don't we do this? I said, well, when the lobbyists come calling, remember that. But I think next year is the year to do it when this tax has fallen off, and we could really make a change in Louisiana.
Well, we need to get you and Foster Campbell together. He's, of course, been pushing this for years. And Dave Treen, he fully acknowledges that Dave Treen started the conversation many years ago, and Foster Campbell fully acknowledges that when he was a state lawmaker, he voted against it the first time when Treen proposed it. But the oil and gas lobby is so powerful in Louisiana. Realistically, can something like this happen?
Well, I think if the governor puts a team together and says, look, let's talk about these lawsuits. Let's put everything on the table. And let's get a fee for the roads, the bridges, the river, the air, that we provide all this. And look, you couldn't exempt Louisiana residents from it, from the increase, but what you could do is you could do like Alaska, give every Louisiana resident a rebate check. You talk about people move back to Louisiana then to get that check every year. So, but I think there's always compromise, and you could put it in to where it needs 2/3 vote, which it would need, and you could sit down with the lobbyists and the companies and say, look, this, we're going to give you the land free forever. We'll clean up the air. What else do you want? But help us get a little fee for all that fuel we're sending up to the East Coast that the people of Louisiana work so hard to produce.
877-217-5757. Robin in Gonzales. Robin, you're on with Lieutenant Governor Nungesser.
Hi. My question is, if anyone has considered legalization of marijuana in the recreational sense as a revenue stream for Louisiana.
What about that? Would that be something that would be palatable in our state?
You know, I don't know what that would bring in, but I have never been in favor of that because, you know, I had hundreds of employees that worked offshore, and it was just a tough thing to get them to pass a drug test to get a good workforce out there. And if you're in the car with your buddies and it's legal and you lose your job because you're inhaling that and you fail a drug test, you'd have to weigh the negatives over the positives, and I don't think it would generate as much as it would hurt our workforce, because I saw it when it's not legal, how it took a toll on so many people's career in the offshore oil industry when I was in that business. And I just think you got to really look deeply in what does it cost in your economic economy and your workforce versus what it may bring in.
All right. Linda Lightfoot, the former editor of The Advocate, a gallant warrior in journalism, asks about your thoughts about the efforts to gut the Louisiana public records law. Governor?
You know, I supported it because the governor asked me to. And in my statement, I said, I've always been one to have full disclosure in my office as parish president, as lieutenant governor, because I always do the right thing, I believe, and I want the public to know what I'm doing. So whatever law passes, anybody requests anything from my office, I gladly give it to them. It's a tough thing. I don't know all the mechanisms behind it, the reason, the pros or the cons of it, but I did put a green card in for it because the governor asked me to, and we'll see where it goes. I know there's a lot of amendments of what can be disclosed and what can't, and we'll see how this ends up.
Well, the governor has acknowledged that the two of you have patched things up, and his comment to me was, it's amazing what a little holy water will do. But are you getting along? Are you talking with each other?
Absolutely. And listen, I had great meetings with him. I gave him all my ideas. If I were to run for governor, he embraced them. I think he truly wants to do the right thing and make Louisiana better. And I told him, just like I told John Bell, and I made a promise to Jimmy Fitzmaurice when I made the promise to John Bell, but I told Jeff Landry I would not talk bad about him ever in public. We could disagree in private, and I would not be running against him in 4 years because he's got to know that I'm there to work with him, and where he can't go represent Louisiana, I will gladly go and represent the state. And that's the best thing for Louisiana, to have a team effort working together. And we've been working together really well. And I see his passion for Louisiana. Even though some people might disagree with some things, he does have a passion and love for Louisiana. And I see that in him.
What about closed primaries? Do you like them?
Well, I've never been for closed primaries. And as a matter of fact, there's a billionaire from Texas, and I'm going to speak in Arizona. And he's sending people all over the country to try to get open primaries for other states. And I agree with him. The only way we're ever going to fix Congress is if people can compromise. And look, there's Republicans that vote for stuff they don't believe in because they'll get beat in the primary. And there's Democrats that ain't as far left. But look, some of the lieutenant governors tell me, if I don't support that, I'll get beat in the primary. That ain't the way it ought to be. People ought to make the right decisions for the right reasons. And we've seen it with Mike Johnson up in Congress now. There's no compromise. And you don't get, look, getting nothing done is not an option. And for the last many years, we get nothing done in Congress. And so open primary would give everybody a chance to come together with some common sense.
We're going to spend a few more minutes with Lieutenant Governor Billy Nungesser. Then it's Mark Ballard after this timeout. You're listening to Friday Politics on WWNO 89.9 New Orleans and WRKF 89.3 Baton Rouge. And a few more minutes with Lieutenant Governor Billy Nungesser. And then it's Mark Ballard for his weekly visit. 877-217-5757 is your number. Let's go to Gretchen in St. Francisville. Gretchen, you're on with Lieutenant Governor Nungesser.
Thank you. Quick message of really a salute to a person has to do with the graffiti. There was a Mr. Radke who was called the Gray Ghost who did so much to combat that. And I just wanted to make a salute to him.
All right. Thank you. Let's try Phil in Jefferson. Phil, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. Yes, sir. We have something going on at Jefferson Highway where they broke concrete to resurface it, and they discovered that there's dirt under there, and I wondered why it was such a, like, driving over a roller coaster. You think there's a little bit of state corruption going on?
All right, what about, we're getting into some local matters here, but still, roads are important to us in Louisiana.
Well, you know, I think the governor is taking a look at every department and surely bringing in some new heads and people at DOTD. That department is going to be looked at their bidding process and their change orders and everything that runs the cost up so high for roadways in Louisiana. And after meeting with the head of DOTD, I'm very excited about his dive in to everything from litter to getting the debris off the highways. And really streamlining, getting things moving quickly in Louisiana on these highway projects that seem to get delayed by year and year and year. So I'm excited that there's going to be some changes coming.
Well, Governor, thank you for joining us. Lieutenant Governor William Harold Billy Nungesser, always a pleasure, and I hope we'll do it again next month.
Have a great day, my friend.
You too, my friend. And we're joined now by Mark Ballard in the Beltway and Linda Lightfoot, a former colleague of his. She was his boss for a while at the Advocate, more than a while, long time. She, a few minutes ago, asked a question about the public records issue in Louisiana, and there is legislation to basically gut it, the public records law. Robert Travis Scott, our old friend who was a journalist with the Times-Picayune and then went to work for about a decade with the Public Affairs Research Council, wrote in the pages of the Advocate and Picayune yesterday, Mark, that the governor may have miscalculated the risk of this bill. He asks, does Governor Landry want to become a towering champion of government secrecy who empowers bureaucrats, robs citizens of their rights, allows judges to make laws, and celebrates special interest influence, or does he want to champion the integrity of open government? Those of us who are in the media business, we tend to want open records because it helps our jobs, but nonetheless, I think Bob Mann put it well many years ago when he said, when he was working for Governor Blanco, he says, it's not our records, it's your records. If you want them, you should be able to look at them. Mark, what are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, obviously I'm on the same side as all of the other journalists, but trying to take a look at what they're talking about, and this has gone back in, I mean, Jindal tried to do the same thing. You know, there's always been this sort of effort to try to limit it. And the problem that they keep saying is that people will make these broad requests that require hours and hours of work from state employees, that there's not enough state employees to do what they're supposed to be doing. but they are having to deal with these broad requests that are not, and so that seems to be their reasoning for wanting to cut back. But of course, also they're politicians, and they don't want to have too much information that goes out against and undermines their basics argument.
Well, there's this obvious collision at times between government and the public, and the public represented by the media. But the public, I don't think, is really up in arms about this, really showing the same kind of apathy it did when only 35% of us voted for a candidate in the last governor's election. When it comes to state matters, it's almost a collective yawn out there, Mark.
Well, it is. I mean, your caller Mr. Nungesser was, you know, asking, well, is there some sort of state corruption kind of thing? And I think that's when the public's going to realize, oh, wait, you know, we probably should have had paid closer attention while they were trying to limit the amount of public records that are, or the amount of government records that are actually made public.
It would be a good exercise, and a listener actually suggested this, and I fully embrace it, to go back 20 or 30 years and look at the public officials who were indicted, and in many cases convicted, and it started with newspaper and other media stories about what was going on in their world, and now rarely do we see an indictment of any public official. It is interesting that either the prosecutors are more tepid than they used to be, or maybe the media are not as vigilant. There are fewer people in the business, and now there are these impediments to keep records that are vital to exposing the truth away from those who report on what's going on.
Yeah, and that is true. I mean, the numbers of reporters have, you know, dramatically dropped to the point where it's hard enough to kind of just keep up with the latest information, much more kind of going into and studying closely particular issues, and not just to find corruption, but just to, you know, understand what's going on and who all the players are, and why choices were made the way they were. And that's the problem that we have had with the media, and how we're going to have to find a business model that supports what is basically, we're all turning to these clicks, you know, the online version, and that does not have the same amount of money involved. So we're not getting the same number of reporters actually doing their jobs.
877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org. And a listener implores me, and I did say we would be talking about this, and for good reason, about what's happening with the U.S. Supreme Court. You're probably not too far from the federal courthouse, are you, Mark?
My office window overlooks the Supreme Court, so I get to watch it, you know, whenever I'm bored. But yes, they had a number of major cases that they heard arguments on this week.
Well, the Supreme Court yesterday gave every indication that it will likely reject former President Donald Trump's absolute immunity claim from prosecution over election interference, but several justices signaled reservations about the charges that could cause a lengthy delay of his case in Washington, and the delay would mean it would go beyond the November election, which means if he were to win that election, it probably would kill the case. A majority of the justices, from an AP story I'm quoting, did not appear to embrace the claim of absolute immunity that would stop Special Counsel Jack Smith's prosecution of the former president on charges he conspired to overturn the 2020 election loss to Joe Biden. But in arguments lasting more than 2.5 hours, they did seem to indicate that they would be in favor of limited immunity. Justice Samuel Alito said, "Whatever we decide is going to apply to all future presidents." But these justices, three of them, were appointed by Trump, including the Louisiana native Amy Coney Barrett. She did give some indication she has some concerns about this immunity question, but the conservatives on that court, Alito, Thomas, Gorsuch, and Kavanaugh. Gorsuch and Kavanaugh, also appointed by Trump. They show every indication they're going to back the former president on this matter, Mark.
Well, yeah. It's a fool's errand to try to guess what these justices are going to do. But I read their questioning and the same way that you did, and it looks like Amy
Coney
Justice Barrett.
Yeah.
You get all of that. That's tough for me. But that Justice Barrett was asking questions that seemed to indicate that she was not on board with the idea of immunity for a president, not just for this president and not just for this election, but from here on out. And the definition of it, of what is a crime and what can be prosecuted, apparently is something that is a concern for all of the justices. Though Alito and Justices Alito in particular was indicating with his questioning that he's all for, you know, protecting the presidents from what he thinks is political attacks on a criminal basis or using a criminal charge to attack a president politically.
Well, as the former president was running for office in 2016, his friend at the National Enquirer, David Pecker, was scooping up potentially damaging stories about the candidate and paying out tens of thousands of dollars to keep him from the public eye. Pecker has been the star witness in the first week of the hush money trial in New York City. "I'm not paying for this story," Pecker told jurors at Trump's hush money trial, recounting his conversation with Michael Cohen, the lawyer for Donald Trump at that time, and he was talking about the money paid to Stormy Daniels, the Baton Rougean adult film star, who was paid $130,000 for her silence. Pecker was already $180,000 in the hole on other Trump-related stories by the time the Daniels story came along, and as a result, Donald Trump apparently paid to make Stormy Daniels go away, and he is accused of concealing those payments, disguising them as legal fees for Michael Cohen, who is later to testify. Mr. Cohen's been to prison and has been found guilty of crimes involving this case, and his credibility may be somewhat in jeopardy. But Stormy Daniels is likely to testify, as is Karen McDougal, the former Playmate of the Year for Playboy magazine, who allegedly had a year-long relationship with the president, was paid $150,000 for her silence. We'll talk more with Mark about this and more. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana Friday Politics. Mark Ballard of The Advocate and Picayune, who covers the nation's capital, and for a generation he reported from the state capital. He's with us. 877-217-5757 is your number. And we were talking about the trial in New York City that could last, according to estimates, 6 to 8 weeks, involving former President Trump, who is in the courtroom and obviously is uncomfortable with some of the testimony that is being recited from the stand. And one of his former friends, David Pecker, the person who runs the National Enquirer, was accused of catch and kill, is what they call it, paying for stories and then not running them, and paying Karen McDougal $150,000, and then Stormy Daniels he did not pay because Donald Trump did not pay Pecker back, according to Pecker, the $150,000 and then $30,000 for another matter. And then it was Michael Cohen who had to intercede in the Daniels matter. And according to Cohen, Donald Trump paid him $130,000, which was delivered to Miss Daniels. And then it was concealed, according to Michael Cohen, as legal payments to the attorney at that time for the former president. Now, for those who say this is a political witch hunt, Mark, it is notable that John Edwards, who was the Democratic vice presidential candidate in 2004, he was John Kerry's running mate, he was tried in a similar case and the jury hung, or he might have gone to federal prison. In his case, it was a federal trial. This is a state trial. That's why Trump is vulnerable, because he cannot be pardoned by a federal official. It would take a gubernatorial pardon, which isn't going to happen in New York. But at any rate, it is a mess, and any other politician would probably be thinking about other matters than running for the highest office in the land. But Donald Trump trudges forward. He's running, and some say he's actually benefiting from this. What is your assessment of where we are at this point?
Well, he's been successful in kind of creating himself as a victim of the deep state attacks from government. You know, that is trying to. He says, you know, silence his arguments and his politics. I mean, that, and he's been successful with that, and he's kept his base basically believing that as well. And you can see that in a lot of the polls, in which a good number of people, they, even if he is guilty of all of this, then it doesn't really matter, because, you know, that's not really a crime. And certainly that is what his defense team is trying to argue, is that what David Pecker was doing is what they do all the time with all sorts of celebrities and rich people, and that is that, you know, they'll pay for catch and kill. They'll make deals so that to tamp down bad stories to get good stories out of it. And so their argument is that this is, you know, standard operating procedure, you know, and so. So what? Where is the crime? And I think that's what the prosecutors are going to have to get to, the crime, which was hiding the money that was paid for. That's where the crime is located. But that's, you know, can they prove it or not? That's the question that we're going to see. And basically, I think that, you know, that this, I'm not altogether sure that the other three prosecutions are going to come up, you know, before the November elections.
I don't think so, but this one could result in a conviction or an acquittal or a hung jury. But in New York City, Donald Trump is not popular, and the jury pool is reflective of the people in New York City. Now, that said, in these battleground states, and they're listing North Carolina now as a battleground state, which would mean there's seven states that are generally thought to be in play in this election. The other 43, we know that Donald Trump's going to get Louisiana's 8 electoral votes. That's a given. We know Joe Biden's right. Going to get California's 54 electoral votes. But Wisconsin, Trump up by 2, Arizona up by 5, in Georgia he's up by 4 points, in Michigan he's ahead by 3. In North Carolina, up by 5, and in Nevada, by 5 points. That's the latest polling. And the only state that is a battleground state, Joe Biden is up by 0.4% over Donald Trump. Now, with the election 27 weeks from this coming Tuesday, I would have to say that is a concern for the Democratic Party. And it's too late now to switch horses, it would seem, but would have a more generic Democrat done better in a head-up race against Donald Trump, Mark?
I don't know. That is hard to say, because one thing that the Biden administration has done is they have made significant strides in, like, the infrastructure in quelling the COVID crisis and investing in things like chips, the computer chips, which basically stopped the production of cars for a while because they didn't have the chips to go into the already built cars. I mean, so he's been doing that, and he's also had problems like, you know, the leaving Afghanistan, for instance, was a definite problem for him. So, you know, could Gavin Newsom step in and say, you know, stand in front of those things that the Biden administration does? I'm not altogether sure that would be possible, you know, but there, and that's not a real good answer for you, but it seems like that's the guy we've got now.
For what it's worth, the Real Clear Politics betting averages, despite Trump leading in all these battleground states, and it's probably as a result of what's going on in the courtroom in New York City, Biden is now the favorite, 43.2. to win the election, Trump 41.3, and Robert Kennedy Jr., believe it or not, is at 3.8%. And a listener asked a good question about the third-party influence on this race. That could be immense as far as how those swing states go.
Well, it certainly has been in past presidential elections. But from what I've been hearing and reading is that, first off, the Kennedy family has come out in unified support of Biden against their member, RFK Jr. And now there are people thinking that the arguments that he raises, the anti-vax arguments and those deep state arguments that that Kennedy is raising, is actually going to pull votes away from Trump rather than Biden, as they originally thought. So that should be an interesting look, too. But right now, I think that shift kind of indicates that that sort of realization that Kennedy is actually going to pull more votes from Trump than from Biden.
Well, when we look at the map, the 12 states of the Southeastern Conference have 160 electoral votes, and Trump is ahead in all of them, and I think he will carry all of them except for possibly Georgia, but he's the favorite there. And if he wins those, he only needs 110 more electoral votes to win. And we're talking 110 of the remaining votes, which would mean there are 538 votes. So if you subtract 160 from 538, you're at 378. So that's 110 of 378 remaining, which means that he would need around 30% of the remaining electoral votes to pull it out. So he cannot be discounted. James in Metairie. James, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Hi, Jim. Good morning. Hello, Mark. Some thoughts for the weekend. A Russian hacking group has admitted that earlier in the day, they went into a site.
James, are you moving? You're fading on us. So can you?
I'm sorry, Jim. Can you hear me now?
That's better. Yes.
Anyway, some thoughts in the week. A Russian hacking group admitted to cyber attacking a small Texas town's water facility. Now, on the floor of the U.S. House of Representatives, Mike Turner, who's head of an intelligence committee, said that there's Russian propaganda being heard on the floor of the U.S. House of Representatives. They're falsely claiming, they're parroting Vladimir Putin's thoughts that the conflict in Ukraine is between Russia over NATO.
All right, we're short on time, but I think something relevant to that is the vote on funding to Ukraine. Mike Johnson put his chin on the block. And Mark, he got the vote for funding for Ukraine. Over 300 members of the House voted, but most of them were Democrats. A majority of Republicans voted the other way. And in Louisiana, Garrett Graves, Clay Higgins, and Julia Letlow all voted against funding for Ukraine, while Johnson, Scalise, and Troy Carter voted for it. Your thoughts?
Right. Mike Johnson definitely led with his chin on that. And we're going to see that this coming week, as we're going into the new week. That's when the far right, and they already have the votes, are going to make an attempt to, as far as we can tell right now, at least that's what they're saying, are going to make an attempt to see if they can oust Johnson over that particular vote and the fact that the border security idea that he up with didn't pass.
All right. Well, a listener notes correctly that Johnson was at your alma mater, Columbia University, a few days ago. I'm sure you were interested.
Yeah, I watched that. I think that they're kind of. I think that the Republicans are basically trying to lay into the support for Israel factor and trying to paint Democrats and probably rightfully so as having issues with the way that Israel is handling the war.
Well, thank you, Mark Ballard. We'll talk again next week. Until next week, for Robin Dow, I'm Jim Engster. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and stay tuned.